it's the attitude and the type of robot-like mentality that many of the agents develop after working.
Could you describe that just a bit?
Yeah, well, the FBI is run in a very autocratic fashion by its director, J. Edgar Hoover, and his policies and have to be accepted with no deviation whatsoever, and there are many things which the FBI agents find fault with in his policies, in the internal workings of the Bureau, and this has led to a great lowering of the morale and a great disenchantment with the FBI.
And specifically, there are some things you mention which might be worth mentioning. You speak, for example, of the fact that FBI men are required to dress alike, I believe. And you also speak of various personal idiosyncrasies of the director which they are asked to cater to. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. This is something which has caused a lot of irritation among the Bureau's agents. Mr. Hoover has got some very opinionated beliefs on how an FBI agent should dress, on how an FBI agent should act and generally conduct himself. He's developed what in effect is almost a uniform for FBI agents. It's a civilian uniform in a sense, and this consists of always wearing a hat, wearing shirts with French cuffs, wearing dark suits, and having your hair cut long. And any agent, also loud ties and loud socks are very much discouraged. And this is just a personal idiosyncrasy on his part, which he feels that all agents should accede to.
Do any agents deviate from this norm?
Well, I think in the field offices, which are very rarely visited by Hoover or Bureau officials, those that are at great distances from Washington, I think that this is there are some deviations. But it's very dangerous to in the FBI to deviate from anything that any fiat that Mr. Hoover promulgates.
Have you met Mr. Hoover?
Yes, we have. We had our training class had the occasion to meet Mr. Hoover about halfway through our training course.
Would you describe that meeting?
Well, we had been prepped for several days before the meeting by our class counselors and advisors who were with us throughout the training program. And we were very carefully instructed on how Mr. Hoover prefers us to dress, and also we were given instructions on handshaking. And this one counselor pointed out to us that it's very likely that anybody who shakes hands with Mr. Hoover with a moist palm would probably be fired, because Mr. Hoover, in meeting the class, is going to very carefully appraise us in terms of our moral character, and we were told that Mr. Hoover considers anyone with a moist palm as being a person of weak character and not the kind of person he'd like to have as a special agent.
Does Mr. Hoover himself approve of all agents in the department?
Well, he's introduced to all the agents if he's in Washington at the time the training class is going through their program. I don't think that he approves of all the applications personally. No. if there's any serious question or doubt which is not resolved by his subordinates, then on occasions he might, an application might be referred to him for his final approval.
When you say if he would be in Washington, would there be any other places where he might be?
Oh, well, yeah. In the last few years, the FBI director has not been in close touch with the day-to-day operations of the Bureau. He does a lot of traveling around throughout the country on various matters, which...
These are Bureau matters.
Well, I'm not too convinced that all of them are. I know that many of the agents tell me, agents from all over the country tell me that he frequently has attended racetracks when he's visited their field offices. Mr. Hoover's a great racing fan, and he, from what I understand from the agents in the Bureau who have been, you know, following his activities in that respect, he spends quite a bit of time at different racetracks throughout the country.
You mentioned... Well, let's put it this way. There seems to be some dissatisfaction among many agents, and many of them have expressed to you a desire to leave the Bureau. And yet, I believe that turnover in the Bureau is relatively low, and tenure in the Bureau relatively long. How would you account for this?
Well, there seems to be a very definite fear on the part of agents to resign from the Bureau unless they've put in enough years to entitle them to retire. Many agents have had very bad experiences in not being able to get a good recommendation from the FBI as a previous employer when looking for other jobs. And this has had a very severe effect on the turnover rate.
Have you encountered any difficulties along these lines?
Yes, I have. But I'm not quite certain whether it is due to that or whether it is due to the fact that I've been critical of some FBI policies and of its director to various people down in Washington.
Do you have any reason to believe that if you'd stayed, do you have any reason not to believe that if you'd stayed with the Bureau, that your career would have been a successful career with the Bureau?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Successful?
That you would have risen through the ranks and been promoted, and do you feel that...
I have very little doubt that my Bureau career would have been a successful one.
And you've...
My work, when I was with the Bureau as an agent, was highly commended on many occasions by my supervisors, and I had quite an excellent record.
Do you have any of those commendations around?
No, these were in performance ratings, which are part of my personnel record, which are now in the FBI's, are still in the FBI's possession.
But you have seen these commendations?
Oh yes, seen them and initialed them.
Were you critical of the FBI when you were a member of the Bureau? And would this in any way have hindered your career in the Bureau?
No, I wasn't outspoken in my criticism as an agent, because the FBI will not tolerate any criticism from its employers. It's got a very rigid mentality in that respect. And you can't question anything about the FBI's operations or procedures or methods while you're an employee. There have been several instances in which agents have tried to improve what they felt were shortcomings in the Bureau and have been dealt with very severely.
Could you explain that?
Yeah, well, there was one case in... it was about a little over a year ago. This was in... this was about May or June 1960, in which one of the agents by the name of Bill Turner wrote to several members of Congress, Senator Javits, Congressman Seller, and I believe several others, with respect to shortcomings in FBI policy and administration. And the FBI soon found out about these letters, and he was fired. And this is similar experiences have been encountered by other agents who have criticized the FBI and have found that they've suffered some disastrous consequences.
Did he find it difficult to get a job after he had been dismissed by the Bureau?
Well, I don't I don't know too much about his activities in looking for a job after that, but I do know that after he was dismissed, after he was fired, he filed for a hearing before the Civil Service Commission under the Veterans Preference Act. You see, under this act, any veteran has, whether covered under civil service laws or not, has the right to a hearing to determine whether any personnel action that had been taken against him was justified. And this agent filed for such a hearing and retained Edward Bennett Williams, the very well-known trial attorney, for this purpose. And Agent Turner lost at the hearing level, but it was an interesting thing that all of the charges against Agent Turner, which the FBI had made to justify the dismissal, were all found to be without any basis. And the FBI was upheld merely because it was against FBI regulations and policy to communicate with congressmen about internal bureau operations. Now, Agent Turner and Edward Bennett Williams, his attorney, both feel that this is a direct violation of his constitutional rights under the First Amendment, which protects his right to petition the Congress for redress of grievances. And it was on this basis that he took an appeal before the Civil Service Appeals Board. And at that level, the FBI was also upheld. At this point, from talking to Bill Turner and Edward Bennett Williams, I understand that they're going to file for a review of this decision in the Federal District Court shortly.
You say that you were not critical of the FBI during the time that you were in the Bureau. Let me read you this from your report to Attorney General Miller, Assistant Attorney General Miller. During the first week of training, the new agents are required to purchase and read Masters of Deceit by J. Edgar Hoover and The FBI Story by Don Whitehead. We were required to submit book reports on each of these books. During the latter part, and then he used an index number, 107, informed our training class that the director had consented to autograph either of the hardcovered editions of these books for those who wished to purchase them as personal mementos or as gifts for friends and relatives. This official then passed around a list for those who wished to sign up for the purchase of these books. The following day, he approached me and stated that I was the only new agent in the class who did not order at least one of the director's books. I informed these officials that the literary quality of these books was such that I did not care to insult the intelligence of my friends and family by sending them copies. I reminded them that I had already read these two books and was, by this time, fully acquainted with the FBI and the danger of communist conspiracy. These officials then reminded me that the purchase list will receive the director's personal attention and that it would want to know the names of those agents who did not purchase any. I learned from 109 that all Bureau personnel were pressured into buying the hardcover editions of these books when they were published. Now, do you think that your criticism was held against you?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, the very next day, I was questioned at great length by several Bureau officials in Washington about my loyalty to the Bureau and to the director, and that they felt that the statements which I had made to this Bureau advisor who had I felt had been pressuring the class into purchasing these books was an indication that I was not I had not given my full loyalty to the director. And I think it probably, I'm quite sure that this incident was probably noted in my personnel file, although there wasn't anything after that which, any similar incident which occurred after that time.
Were any other protestations of loyalty to the director asked of agents?
Oh, yes. We had... we were constantly urged by our superiors when we were going through our training program to write laudatory letters to the director thanking him for the opportunity of having gone through the FBI training program and also congratulating him on his birthday and on the anniversary of his undertaking the director's position, and also on the anniversary of his going before the House Appropriations Committee.
You were asked to write these letters to the director?
Yes.
Most agents wrote the letters?
I think that probably most agents did. You see, we were told by our Bureau supervisors that it's very difficult to get pay raises and promotions in the Bureau unless the director the director receives a great number of laudatory letters from the individual agents, and these letters are then put in the agent's personnel file. And when time for promotion comes up, if you don't have a great many letters in there, then you might very possibly be passed over.
Did you yourself write these letters?
No, I never wrote any letters to the director.
After you left the department, after you left the Bureau, you said that you experienced some difficulty in finding a job. Did you experience any other difficulties?
Oh, well, I had, I've been threatened in a general way by several very high Bureau officials. Because of my criticisms of the FBI to people in the Justice Department, the Civil Rights Commission, and to several members in Congress.
Could you describe those general threats?
Yeah, on one occasion, the assistant to the special agent in charge of the New York field office told me that if I continue to criticize the FBI, I'm going to find myself in a lot of trouble.
Did he specify in what way?
No, he didn't. On another occasion in Washington, the assistant director in charge of training and inspection told me that the FBI was in possession of some very serious allegations against me, and that they wanted to discuss some of these matters with me. And I took this as a very naked attempt to intimidate me.
Did you discuss them with them?
No, I didn't.
And Did anything subsequently happen regarding these allegations?
No, nothing ever happened.
Was any investigation carried out on you after you left the department, to your knowledge?
Well, I've been conscious of FBI agents following me for several months. When I was down in Washington in February and March of 1961 discussing these matters with people down there, they apparently were very concerned about my criticisms, and they wanted to know who I was talking to. I can't recall of any, these generally were some of the experiences that I've had.
Has there been a precedent for this kind of criticism of the agency, of the Bureau, from other agents? Have any other agents been as critical after they left the department, after they left the Bureau? Do you know?
Well, I don't recall of any agent, with the exception of this agent William Turner, who wrote these letters to members of Congress last 2 years ago. I don't recall any other agent who's ever been openly critical of the Bureau. Although from I've talked to many former agents who feel very strongly, as I do, that there are some very serious shortcomings in the FBI. But these agents have been reluctant to voice their criticisms because of fear of recriminations by the Bureau.
Now let me get this straight, if I might. You resigned from the FBI, and subsequent to that, you submitted this report at the request of Mr. Miller of the Justice Department. Is that correct?
That's right.
And subsequent to that, you also spoke before the Civil Rights Commission. You were interviewed by the Civil Rights Commission.
Yes, that's correct.
And did you go to any of the other organs of government or the press, for that matter? Did you speak to any of the press people, the Associated Press, the New York Times, any?
Yes, I have. I'll tell you how this thing developed generally. At first, I thought that it would probably be best to discuss these matters on a confidential basis with the Justice Department. Prior to that, I tried on several occasions to get an appointment with the director, J. Edgar Hoover, to get an explanation from him on some of the things that I had witnessed in the Bureau.
What was his reaction?
I wasn't able to get an appointment with him. Every time that I had gone down there, they always told me that he was unavailable. So after this, I started to...
Hello, Edith, could you do me a favor? Can you hear me? Can you call my wife, Trafalgar 7, 2530, and explain what's happened, and I'm not going to be home. Yeah.
Well, Tom is really fine.
Okay, but I would like to keep going for a little while.
Yeah,
I think we've got to.
I was saying that after my attempts to discuss some of these matters with Hoover himself, I then began talking to several people at the Justice Department, and eventually I got an appointment with Assistant Attorney General Herbert Miller in charge of the Criminal Division, and it was at this point that Mr. Miller asked me to prepare this written report for him. At about the same time, I had gotten in touch...
Just a second. I want to clarify that for one more minute.
Yes.
Could you please explain the exact circumstances under which Mr. Miller asked you to prepare this report? I mean, very specifically, what happened?
Well, I had been offered a job by the Justice Department shortly after I had gotten out of the FBI in the organized crime section. They were very interested in getting... a former agent to work for them because they had no idea of what the internal operations of the Bureau were like and what how they conduct their investigations and how they go about doing things. So they thought that the experience of a former agent would be very valuable to them. Then, in a course of interviews with officials of the organized crime section, I had given them information which had come to my attention as a bureau agent with respect to the bureau's investigations into the area of organized crime. And some of this information appeared to startle the section chief and several others who I was interviewed by. And from what I understand, this information was transmitted up through the channels in the Justice Department to Assistant Attorney General Miller. And then shortly after that, I was told that this position was no longer available to me, this position in the organized crime section, which I was previously offered. Well, when I learned of this, I got an appointment with Herbert Miller to find out what had happened. And I was led to understand that the FBI had was very displeased by my giving information to the Justice Department and by criticizing them, and that they didn't feel that they could employ me in the Justice Department because of the strained relations which might result. And in talking to Mr. Miller about this, we got into discussing the FBI generally, and he had asked me to prepare a report for him in writing about some of these problems, which I did, and which was well forwarded to Mr. Miller and then by him to his superiors, Byron White, the Deputy Attorney General, and Robert Kennedy.
What was the reaction of the Justice Department to your report?
Well, they gave a very non-committal reaction. I don't really know.
Did they call you in for interviews?
Oh yes, I had several conferences with Assistant Attorney General Miller. With assistance in the Deputy Attorney General's office, and with Robert Kennedy's executive assistant in the Attorney General's office, on these questions.
But there has been no action taken as a result of your report.
I've seen some action that I think has been a direct result of this report, and that is the FBI recently employed its first Negro agent, and I think that that came about as a result of the information which I disclosed to them. Also, I understand that that Hoover has changed somewhat his internal policies in the FBI with respect to this overtime
program, would you mind explaining this?
Which she has been quite obsessed with in recent years. Well, the overtime program in the Bureau came about as a result of Public Law 764, which was passed by the Congress in 1954. And this law compensates all federal employees who whose overtime on the job cannot be controlled administratively. As compensation for this overtime, there was a bonus of $984 a year, which is added to your paycheck in equal installments. And to qualify for this bonus, you must have worked at least 1 hour and 12 minutes per day. On an average through the course of a month. When this law went into effect, it had several effects on the FBI's operations. Well, for one thing, the supervisors and special agents in charge of the various offices discovered that the Bureau was using the overtime statistics, which they were required to keep, as evidence of the workload being carried in a particular by a particular squad or in a particular field office, so that when the Bureau's headquarters in Washington received the overtime statistics from the Chicago office, let's say, of which indicated an hour and a half overtime per agent, an average overtime, when compared with the New York office, let's say, which had 2 hours of overtime per agent per day, this would indicate that the New York office